Hello, everyone, and welcome to the PPC Show brought to you by AdStage. I am Paul Wicker.
And I'm JD Prater.
And today is August 2nd, and these are your top headlines in paid marketing, to be specific. And first off, sorry if you had to suffer through the solo show last week. We tried to record, and the recording died, and I just did a mini version. Although it has record high downloads, so I think maybe you're fired. I'm just kidding. It actually has like 20% less, but it takes a few weeks to figure out.
Yeah. Well, I still appreciate it. You got me halfway through my commute, so I still appreciate that, even though the good people didn't get to hear us talk and banter. But hey, the show goes on, Paul. Here we are, August 2nd. It's been like, 2 weeks now since we've had a real convo.
And we, I mentioned it as I did my version of it. I was like, and JD and I talked about this, and JD and I talked about that. So it was probably a terrible episode. So I'm sorry if you just finished that maybe, and now you're hitting forward to listen to the next episode. But now we're back, and we're back to normal. JD's in a recording booth. He's not on his phone, and we're not trying to record things like crazy. And last week we talked a lot about Cora and AdStage, making it official. I feel like we talk about this every week, but I forget when it's on the podcast or not. So if you'd miss the news, you can now, right now, you can go to AdStage.com, sign up for a free trial. When you link your accounts, you link Facebook and Google Analytics and Salesforce, and now you can also link Cora.
Yeah. Super exciting. We're already seeing some data coming in, Paul. So advertisers have already been linking their accounts with AdStage, getting that data. So very exciting for all you guys listening. Get out there. At the very minimum, use that Google Sheets integration. It's so cheap. Way cheaper. True.
$29.
But anyway, $29. I have to remain neutral.
This is a good commercial. Yeah, that's true. You have other partners with Google
Other
Sheets
partners. But I got another update for you. Full width image ads in Cora. So Cora has officially, if you go into your home feed now, all images are no longer thumbnails. Full width, feed to feed, looks like all the other social networks now. So really exciting. The image size now very similar to Facebook, very similar to your LinkedIn. So it looks sharp. We're seeing CTRs on the rise, which makes everyone happy as well.
Yeah, I did check that out, and it does look great. I agree. That was a very good change by Cora. Any other Cora updates?
Last one you're going to hear about next week as an official announcement, but we have integrated with LiveRamp. So if you're out there doing some people-based marketing, anonymizing those audience lists and everything, you can now import those over into Cora and then target them with ads. So really exciting integration to see.
Nice. So it's like an audience integration. So if you're using LiveRamp, you can retarget that same audience on Cora?
That's correct. You can retarget, and then you can also target other audiences. You know, they also have third-party data, and so you can actually port those over into Cora as well. So if you wanted to target, let's say, millennial sharp shoppers that are interested in gardening. I don't know. It's like one of these weird, like, custom intent audiences.
Very specific.
I made that one up. I think it should be one, but...
Did you call them sharp shoppers? Millennial sharp shoppers?
Sure. I would listen to the recording.
All right. I was just sitting here going, what is a sharp shopper? But they're in the gardening. I'm down.
Yeah. Sharp objects, maybe. How about that? Sharpening their tools for gardening.
I was picturing, like, you know, they look sharp. Like they're
Look sharp. Oh, okay. Or maybe they are sharp. Not set around. I don't know. I mean, they're not dull.
So that's good. Everybody loves LiveRamp. LiveRamp is owned by Oracle? No.
Axiom, but Axiom. They just spun them off.
Right. They were bought by Axiom a few years, and the Axiom now spun them off. That's right. That's what I just saw, the spinoff.
Bought by Yahoo, sold to Axiom, spun off in the last 4 years.
They were bought by Yahoo? Man, I have been out of the audience data space for a bit.
But we had Oren. Oren was their former CEO on the Grow with Cora podcast, and so he talked... not on air, but he was filling me in on a little bit of that. So they sold to Yahoo in like 2015 for like tons of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions.
Well, just nobody's listening. Tell me how much they sold.
The public. It's in his like LinkedIn bio.
Okay, all right, then it's public. So yeah, what is it?
Yeah, hold on, let me get there.
Okay. Yeah, I did listen. If you don't listen to the Grow at Quora podcast, you should. And I did listen to Oren, and he talks a lot about writing. So on Twitter, it was funny because Hiten Shah, I think it was Hiten Shah, who's one of the founders of HubSpot, I think, if I'm not mixing up my companies, was saying about how writing is so like critical to getting your thoughts together and great writers. It's like a skill you should have in your career no matter what you do. And then Oren's podcast, he was talking about why he uses Quora. It was, you know, for him to get into the habit of writing and hold himself accountable. So it was a really nice tie. And then I tweeted, and then I connected the two of them with a tweet. So I really feel good about connecting millionaires.
Yeah, I got it here. Sold to Axiom in 2014 for $310 million.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of millions.
And now they are a public company. You can find them at Ramp, R-A-M-P.
Interesting. Okay, what headlines do we have? I'm trying to see if there's any good tie-ins to LiveRamp. That's what I'm humming
GDPR,
over here.
GDPR. Because you want to use LiveRamp to avoid GDPR stuff, right?
Right. Well, not to avoid GDPR, but be compliant with GDPR.
Compliant, sure. Yeah.
So we talked about GDPR a lot, I don't know, 6 months, a year ago. We kind of haven't heard about it much, although we did bring up this issue in Europe where there were some workers that are listening to Google's recordings from their Google Home product. So when you say, okay, Google, now my phone's going to turn on, you know, and you're talking, like right now I'm talking and Google's actually recording me, and it's saying, it just told me, here's an answer to, why is my phone not switching on? Anyway, somebody, when that doesn't work, somebody has to listen to that recording and try to guess what really was said. Anyway, somebody said, you know, we're hearing a lot of crazy things and private conversations and violence, and we talked about a lot in the other podcast. Anyway, so now Google has been ordered to halt human review of these AI recordings over privacy risk, and they actually invoked the GDPR. So the Hamburg Data Protection Authority told Google of its intention to use Article 66 of the GDPR to begin an emergency procedure to shut down this practice. So it all sounds very official.
Yeah, to which Google replied, yeah, we already stopped doing that 2 weeks ago. That was really good. I thought it was such a good one. It's like, yeah, we contact you on July 26th, and then our response is, yeah, we stopped doing that on July 10th.
That's like classic government regulation in some ways. Like by the time the government's caught up, it's like, oh yeah, we already changed it. Like,
already changed, yeah.
It probably took them like 3 weeks to write the memo.
Yeah, exactly.
So GDPR back in the news, and then also from Google, a lot around app campaigns. So AdExchanger had an article about Google adding in more inventory that already existed, but now that inventory is available if you're running like an app download campaign. So it's coming from places like Google Discover, YouTube Search, and then in-stream YouTube ads, which obviously those ads have all existed, especially the YouTube ads, but now they're actually running app campaigns in there. The only kind of new inventory source, I guess, is Discover, which it used to be called the Google Feed. But it's, you know, if you have like an Android phone and you swipe left, you'll a lot of times see the Discover feed. And there's probably other places people have it. But they added ads to it back in May, and it's now up to 800 million monthly active users. And now app campaigns will appear there as well.
Yeah, I mean, again, you see Google doing this, trying to find more revenue as they continue to try to grow, right? I mean, it's how do I get 1 or 2% more gains? That said, in all the app campaigns that I've ever run, YouTube has always been the most expensive, like not even close, 10x more than the next closest channel. And I wouldn't expect a whole lot of inventory to open up within this one. You might get some impressions, but yeah, I doubt you're going to get a ton of downloads from this. So right. I think it's more of how can we extend reach more so than we're going to get you more installs.
Well, we'll see how this Discover feed performs. I mean, it's new. It's only been out for 2 months. And it's also, but it's one of those things that are they getting all their usage because it's, you know, preloaded on your Android phone and how many people actually use it. But 800 million active users, monthly active users. I mean, Google, you know, obviously all the big folks, Facebook, Google, they can do this. They can launch a product and instantly get, you know, a million MAUs, in their case, 800 million MAUs just in May. So it's a lot of inventory. And then one other change from Google, the featured snippets feature, which we talked about. I think we talked about featured snippets, but they're now changing the algorithm that powers the snippets. So the more recent the information, then like the higher it ranks. So kind of rewards freshness of data. There's probably a lot of like really old data in people's featured snippets. So
I bet there are so many like SEO marketers out there that are just furious. Like they have been chasing these featured snippets. They've been tracking them, monitoring them. They're trying to get their content to get this featured snippet. Google comes in, is like, yeah, this is what we're doing now. And it's like, damn it, I have to rechange everything. So everyone's chasing that free, I call it quote unquote free organic traffic, even though you spend a lot of time optimizing content, you know, with your SEO team, your content team, really trying to make sure it's structured well. But another change, another no real surprise for me.
Yeah, and some of the examples of how bad it used to be, like the featured snippets, like when you do an organic search and, you know, you got, in their example, the upcoming school holidays used to show you school holidays from, like, last year, like 2018 to 2019. It's like, whoops. Yeah, so if, to your point, I mean, if you did one round of this with your SEO folks, it's time to go update it. And I think that's all for Google. We could head over to Facebook. So there's this one like took headlines. There was in like mainstream media, this whole brain interface. I don't know. Have you read about yeah. Facebook now wanting to plug directly into your brain?
Yeah, I heard a little bit about it. It was, I don't know if you listened to the Pivot this morning. They talked about it as well, and it was kind of funny. But I think at the end of the day, I'm just like, why? Like I get it. I mean, I that's really interesting. But I'm just trying to understand like. What is the monetization of this? Like, what are you going to get from this? That's what I'm trying to get into.
Yeah, well, I mean, the technology itself obviously has a lot of, like, very good uses for people that have Lou Gehrig syndrome or have lost control of their body in many different ways, you know, whether it's speech or whether it's their motor control, so they can't type either. So, and obviously, if you ever hear Elon Musk talk about the problems with humans, is that we have really, like, low input volume. So like, well, I guess output volume, not input volume, sorry. So like, we're very good at taking signals in. So like when we look and use our eyeballs, we're processing tons of data. I mean, we're rendering in very high resolution, very large images and three dimensions. So like our ability for our eyeballs and brain to handle data coming in is like exceptional. And our storage is pretty good too, like our memory, short-term and long-term is like pretty good. Can't compete with a computer at all. Long-term memory for a computer obviously is like almost perfect. Oh, there is degradation, but over time we're a human, you know, our long-term memory is crap. Anyway, but output is terrible. So for us to get information out of a human being, you rely on speech or you rely on typing, which means moving your fingers back and forth. And your brain is able to move like much faster. So Elon Musk talks about this like main problem in kind of humans is we're too slow to get our, you know, information out of our brain and into our device or into whatever, which is like pretty meta. Well, it's just pretty crazy. It's a bad use of the word meta. Anyways, so he's been huge on this issue and been talking about it for a long time, that once we can just plug our brain directly into everything, the internet and the world, like we're going to unlock human potential in like a crazy way. So I didn't do any drugs before talking about this. I'm just,
the pink elephant in the room, the 800-pound gorilla, privacy and Facebook, right? I mean, do you want Facebook reading your brain? I mean, no. I mean, they just haven't done a great job. And until they address a lot of their privacy and security concerns, which I think they're trying to address by going crypto, like cryptic with a lot of their stuff, they're encrypting, right? And which also brings in even more questions of like, well, then how are we ever going to monitor what happens when you encrypt everything? So anyway, I think it's just like a headline just to get right. A headline that's not negative.
It is also like one of those like way ahead of the real application of this. So it's like very early stage work that they're doing with UCSF on a research paper. It's not like somebody's actually plugging anything into anybody's brain anytime soon. Although Elon Musk did announce like one of his companies is like pretty close to having a working prototype. And it does, I think for them, it's all about VR, AR. I mean, once virtual reality, augmented reality gets to the point where it's like cheap and it's believable, then the problem is that how do you get the output of the human into the system? So that's like going to be the next big barrier once like the whole headset thing and, you know, making sure people don't get motion sick and all that stuff. Once they figure all that out, it's like, well, how do you interact with VR? And today you got to hold these little controllers and walk around a room when you can get rid of all that and just your brain is just communicating with the virtual reality system. Then suddenly, why even be a human anymore? Just upload yourself to the internet and you'll be fine. Anyway, it's getting weird. But because they have Oculus, I feel like that's another reason why this is one of Facebook's long-term bets. I just want to say one thing and then we can move on. Because I love this quote. Neuroethical design is one of our program's key pillars. And I just think it's great that they have a team of people thinking about neuroethical design. It's like become that much of an issue that you can specialize in neuroethics.
Dang, I think I need that job.
Mm-hmm. You just brain.
No, ethics. This is bad. No, this is bad.
Right. rejected. I have to hire someone else. Speaking of rejected, Facebook's also in hot water because of some, I made up this headline called sex tech discrimination. So apparently there's a whole category of products called sex tech, which is like technology that is used for sexual pleasure. And it's got, you know, it's challenging to be in that space because a lot of things are regulated or a lot of things are forbidden to run ads for. Like they were banned from CES, so the Consumer Electronics Show, just this year for the first time let people with sex tech in. So it's a tough space to be in. And apparently what a few companies were claiming is that Facebook discriminates against female-focused sex tech, or like, you know, think of sex toys, right? Or even like sexual performance enhancements. So like for guys, there's Hims, which is advertised heavily, which is like, I don't even know what it is. Like, I don't know if it's an actual medicine. Well, I guess it can't be because they can't advertise medication. So it must just be a supplement. And it's like all about like sexual performance. But trying to do the same thing for females often gets banned. And same things with like sex toys that are appropriate for like, I don't even know what the sex toy appropriate for men is. This is getting to be a strange podcast. According to them, a lot of things that are traditionally targeted men are okay. And when you try to target women, Facebook tells you these ads are not appropriate. And these CEOs and founders, these sex tech companies are saying this is unfair.
Yeah, I think the big one here too is like not even just like men, it's like cisgender men. So if you were born a male with male reproductive parts, that would be you. That would be the people that we're talking about. And this is, you know, this is different than if you're trans or gender nonconforming people. And what's ended up happening is like these products and toys that are geared towards men born males with male reproductive systems, they're more likely to get approved than for those of women and, you know, other nonconforming people. So, yeah, I think they got like an issue on their hand. And a lot of these are somewhat allegations. They do obviously have some proof from running their own advertising. And again, Facebook's kind of on their heels. They're like, hey, look, this doesn't, you know, our policies are this and that. And they're like, yeah, but, you know, sex is healthy, right? Why can't we talk about it being like a health related issue? And so, again, you're just trying to like define what it is and how you do it. And I don't envy that conversation whatsoever. It's really difficult to have. I mean, it's difficult for you and I to have, you know, on a podcast. It's like, I just feel weird, right? Talking about it. So I can't imagine even trying to, you know, run ads against it as well. It's difficult.
We're also like in that class, we're like old. I keep calling us old. Well, you're not that old, but I compared to a lot of our peers, pretty old. So like old white heterosexual males. So we're also like in that bubble of like, you're talking about porn and the internet? That's crazy. And if you're like 15 years old right now, all this stuff is like, what? Of course. Oh yeah, like transgendered sex toys? Let's talk about them.
Yeah, exactly. The norms are changing.
For sure. And you have a kid, so you better figure it out. Because in like 10 years, you know, like, oh, Dad, man. What are the birds and the bees?
I don't even want to think. Okay, moving on.
Facebook is killing thousands of unused ad targeting options. So if you're using some of the interest targeting in Facebook or some of the really specific geos in Facebook, like neighborhoods, Facebook has said they're going away and they will be eliminated. Just a lot of terms that they consider outdated, duplicative, or not relevant. Although I would say argument or small neighborhoods are pretty relevant, but in that case, Facebook says they're just not as effective because they're like micro targets. So a lot of them are going away if you are using them. So the example they used was Mamma Mia. You can target people who are fans of ABBA and Mamma Mia. Then you have until August to remove them or make a smart change, because if you don't, then they're just going to remove them. And then I was playing around in interest targeting. I put a screenshot in here in our account, and I was seeing, like, there are some categories that are, like, so tiny. Like, the audience size for Google app, people who are interested in Google app script, because we have a Google Sheets add-on, and the people who write Google scripts are the ones who usually like things like Google add-ons. But it was 450 people. So
that's really small. I'm actually really surprised that they do have that one. That one is kind of interesting, but this should come as like no real surprise. We've heard this, I mean, a year ago. Remember when they removed like those 5,000 targeting options? Some of those were those B2B options that we really liked. And the issue there was, you know, advertisers were taking advantage of it and they were excluding, you know, certain people from seeing those jobs or homes or like those credit type of ads. And so there was some discrimination there. So they said, hey, we're just getting rid of them. They brought a few of those back. Within these, it's interesting that they said that they're not being used as well. Again, I wonder if there's like some revenue tied to this, whereas maybe they're importing this data, maybe from other like data warehouses. And so they're paying a premium on it.
Right.
And I just wonder if there's some connection there. That is, do not know that answer,
right,
but I'm just wondering.
Well, it always is whenever companies like have this micro-targeting. So one of the examples is you can target San Francisco or you can target a neighborhood called North Beach, which is about 5 minutes from here. And they're like, oh, yeah, but that's not effective. But I'm thinking, well, if I'm like a pizzeria in North Beach or I'm a small business in North Beach, like that sounds pretty effective because San Francisco is pretty big. But what Google used to argue back when they used to have polygon targeting, if you remember, where you could like draw a custom polygon on a map. So, and small businesses would get really specific, like they would be drawing a map and like, well, this side of the street or that side of the street. And then Google's like, look, our geotargeting is not that good. Like it's, you can say that's what you want, but like, it's not, we haven't figured it all out yet. This of course was 10 years ago before we all carried tracking devices in our pocket. Now it is that good. They know where you are up to like 2 feet. But back then they didn't, and they're like, well, you can do all this, but in the end, we're probably going to target people in like San Francisco. So there was that argument, was that they just weren't able to fulfill it at the same rate. And then the other argument is like, hey, if you're that specific, your ad's not going to perform because there's just not enough people on Facebook in these tiny little neighborhoods. So you need to expand.
I'm with you. I'm guessing most of these are going to be really hyper-targeted, but I do agree with you. That hyper-targeted really helped out those SMB, like those mom-and-pop shops that were doing like local marketing. So, and they may have just made the decision that it was such a small percentage or it was a small percentage of revenue that it wasn't worth having. So, yeah, right. It'd be interesting to see what happens.
Hearst is now on the scene as a new publisher. So, reaching back to times of yore, Hearst publishes a bunch of magazines and newspapers that you've heard of. I can't think of off the top of my head. I think Elle Magazine is one I know because we actually have someone that works here that worked at Hearst running their like digital agency a bunch of years ago. But they own a bunch of inventory and they announced they're actually going to build their own self-serve platform so people can buy inventory from their product directly, put a credit card in, use audience retargeting, things along those lines. And they won't disclose who, but they did say they're using the tech from two outside partners so that, you know, basically you don't have to buy their traffic or not that you don't have to, but they don't want to make their traffic available through places like Facebook and Google through their, you know, GDN or other programmatic networks either. So interesting. I don't know if anybody's ever going to spend any money. I mean, they have a lot of good properties. I should get a list of them because you've heard.
Yeah,
of,
they
like,
got. I got a few here: Country Living, Cosmopolitan, Popular Mechanics, Marie Claire. I mean, these are like household names. Like we're all pretty familiar within, you know, these types of magazines and the digital magazines. So again, I think this is a smart move for them to open it up to self-serve. So if you're interested in, you know, really getting eyeballs whenever people are viewing this kind of stuff. And I think one thing too that's important to throw out within this is some of the people were talking that they really enjoyed that they were onboarding their data for activation and then getting those insights back. And I think that was a really important part of, I'd like to see what those insights are. I should probably go in and play around with this, do some competitive research, but getting those insights is key. And I think this is one that I think is probably going to help them the most.
Yeah, I mean, and you can imagine what's happening, right? Like some sales rep goes out and tries to sell you that, hey, you should be in Town and Country or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's an IO and let me send some of this over and it's just a big slow process. But, you know, so having a self-service interface like totally makes sense. Question, and then usually you could charge a lot more, right? Because there's no middlemen taking cuts out. So you're not paying the programmatic folks. And then there's like the yield optimizer folks and, you know, all the people in between. So if you own the inventory, you always have good leverage in the market. And they do own a lot of inventory. They also own, it looks like, you know, Hearst was like a super old rich dude. There's something called Hearst Castle. Literally, they have a castle here on the California coast. And he owned a whole media empire. And he must have been buddies with Disney because I'm looking at the properties they own on Wikipedia. And they own a portion of like Disney's biggest assets. So for instance, they own 20% of ESPN, of which Disney owns 80%. They own 50% of A&E Network, which has things like History Channel, Lifetime, A&E, which 50% is owned by Walt Disney. So I wonder if just at some point he realized Walt Disney was a pretty smart guy and he's like, hey, Walt, where are you investing? And anytime Disney invested, he's like, yeah, give me a little of that action. This is how I imagine it goes.
That's a really great Walt.
Right.
Give me that action.
Right. Well, that was my Hearst.
Oh, the Hearst. Yeah. Sorry.
He's speaking to Walt. So we'll see.
That's good.
We'll see how they do as a standalone programmatic network. And then cool. Spotify, speaking of other networks too, their stock did super well. I don't know if you saw, they put out their July numbers. Oh, no, it didn't. Sorry. Pinterest stock did super well.
Yeah, Pinterest stock
That thing shot up. They beat expectations, their international growth. Apparently Canada is growing really fast, and then some of their other new international markets are growing fast, so the shareholders or the investors like that. But Spotify underperformed. They gave some guidance about adding, I think, 2 million new users, and only added like a million. But either way, they also had an announcement about their ads, which is all we care about. So they added interest targeting and what they call real-time context targeting to Spotify. And I actually created a Spotify ad that is going to run in 8 days.
Really? Did you?
Yeah, that screenshot I put in there is actually the podcast that I podcast commercial. So it's a podcast commercial for this very podcast that's going to run on Spotify and points at our Spotify channel that runs this podcast. But you can pick, so now you can pick interest targeting. Interests are like comedy, cooking, running, and there's one for tech and one for podcasts. So you can guess the two I picked. Tech, podcasts, boom, you should be listening. You could also do what are called real-time contexts. So if you ever use Spotify, there's the like categories like studying and, you know, partying. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So based on that, you know, they Spotify's like, oh, well, if you pick partying, you're probably partying. So you can target folks when they're partying or chilling or cooking or dinner time. So those are new and available self-service. And I got through the whole process. I mean, recording the actual commercial takes some time. If I feel like editing well, I'll put the commercial in right here. Hello, my fellow marketing nerds. Have you been looking for a podcast where we cover all the headlines in marketing? What's Facebook doing? What's Google doing? What are Amazon? That's not even a company. Apple and Amazon and Twitch and Pinterest, what are they all up to? Well, we cover the headlines every week on the PPC show, and we hope you join us. You can find it right here on Spotify if you search for the PPC show or click the link and it will take you right to the show. And then you guys can hear it. It's a 30-second spot I did. I call everybody who listens a marketing nerd, and then I mess up the lines, but I kept it in there because I mess up all the time.
I can't wait to hear this.
Right? So that goes live, $250. Going to see how many podcast views can buy us. We'll let you know how it does.
Nice, man. Dog-fooding it. Really good. All right.
And then lastly is Bing. So I'm not going to go through all of this, JD, because people will get super bored. Basically,
it's a lot.
Yeah, we get a, you know, we're an API partner of Bing, so we get this giant email that this updates on all their roadmap. And I thought, hey, I'll share all the stuff that is public, like publicly accessible, is not behind NDA. So I can just give you a real quick rundown. this is kind of like a generic update of everything that we know that's going on in Bing. Actually, I'd say about 80%, because some things I can't share and other things I feel like you probably already know about. Okay, number one, parallel tracking is coming soon, and there's a bunch of stuff around parallel tracking that's either already shipped or shipping soon, namely final URLs and suffixes are available now. So if you have to do parallel tracking on Google, get ready to do it for Bing. Number two, in beta, lookalike audiences. So they call them similar audiences, but you know how lookalikes work. Available on Bing. Number three, audiences at the campaign level, not just ad group level. I think Google made this change and this is their catch-up move. Dynamic search ads. So they're going to add a second description field. So again, I think Google did this too, and this is their catch-up to Google. So if you're using DSAs, you can now have a second 90-character description field. The next beta is if you're using product audiences, if you have shopping campaigns, you can show ads to users that have a specific product SKU that they interacted with. So that's like super specific and really, you know, towards like Bing shopping. If someone put something in their cart, you can retarget them essentially, target them, because I'm guessing there's people. I don't know if like, because SKUs are global. I'm not a shopping guy, but like I wonder if like if I'm buying a battery, like an Energizer AA battery. Does that have a SKU and then like multiple sellers all sell the same SKU? Pretty sure that's how it works. So they don't have to put in your cart. Just if they've ever interacted with that AA battery, you can target them. And then the last one, in-market audiences, you can now buy them internationally. We've had them in the U.S. for about a year, I think, but they're rolling out in other markets. And then campaign experiments. So they're rolling out similar to Google experiments, Bing experiments, and in both the UI and the API, which is important for us. But, oof. Yeah. Oh, and then there was one that lets me plug AdStage. If you use the Bing reporting API, so one person in the room, raise your hand, they're adding support for Monday to Sunday weekly aggregation. Like right now, you can only do Sunday to Saturday, which is, you know, just funny. Anyway, if you're using AdStage, of course, you have access to Bing data programmatically. Or I should say, if you're using the AdStage API, you can get your Bing data any way you want it, along with data from everywhere else. So you don't even have to worry about Bing's crappy API. Those are all the Bing stories. That's like a Bing attack.
Bing attack.
Right. That's not just all the Bing stories. That's actually all the stories we have for you this week. So if you want more, you could head over to blog.adstage.io and sign up to get a newsletter with all these in your inbox. And I hope you enjoyed the commercial that I played for you on Spotify. You could head over to Spotify, find the PPC show, and subscribe to it right now. All right, everyone. Enjoy your week.
See you guys.